Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. You've heard about the decline of print media. Newsrooms, large and small across the country, have seen their ranks shrink year after year, in concert with shrinking newsroom budgets. The cuts have hit photojournalists as well. In fact, photographers have probably been hit worst of all, with entire departments axed in some cases. Now, roughly half as many photojournalists are employed at newspapers than in 2000. This year, this hour, we're talking about the staffing changes and how they affect the profession of photojournalism and what you see in your daily news source, whether it's the newspaper or online. Joining us is Columbus Dispatch photographer Jonathan Quilter. He has worked with the Dispatch since 2005 as both an editor and staff photographer. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me.
Joining us by phone is freelance photojournalist and adjunct faculty at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University, Rob Hart. Rob was named the 2013 Chicago Journalist of the Year when he was on staff for the Chicago Sun-Times. Welcome to the show, Rob Hart.
Thank you very much, Ann.
In May 2013, the Chicago Sun-Times axed, quite a word, its entire 28-person photography department. What did they tell you at the time about why they were doing that, Rob?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, you know, we were all just taken up into a conference room in a hotel that was two floors above the Sun-Times, and they came in and said, we're moving to video, and, you know, it's hard to focus, you know. You know, we had a really great staff, mm-hmm. You know, John H. White, who was kind of the greatest mm-hmm. photographer, I think, maybe in Chicago, and, you know, he was my photo teacher at Columbia College, and I was standing next to him, and, you know, he put 40 years in that paper, and just kind of watching what they did to him, I think hurt them most. It was kind of a slap in the face of, like, the visual legacy of that newspaper. But, you know, John has been teaching kids like me for almost 40 years, so we're going to keep doing what we do every day, no matter if the Sun-Times wants to pay people or not.
When they said that they were going to video, what did that even mean? I mean, a lot of photographers shoot video now.
Yeah, we had been shooting video since 2006. The head of the video department was a former photographer. I don't know that they knew what that meant. It's hard to tell, you know, since most of the people who made that decision are now gone and they're actually running the Chicago Tribune now. So, you know, it's hard to tell. I mean, I can just speak for myself, and mm-hmm. it's disappointing. You know, I grew up, you know, reading the Sun-Times when I first moved to Chicago when I was in college, and it was a great newspaper, and I think they still do some great work. And my photo student I was just working with this morning at Columbia College, she's the intern at the Sun-Times. So, you know, in a way, like, you know, we're still talking about assignments, and I'm still somehow tangled up in this web. And she's doing great work. I mean, Maria is a really great kid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's not a kid, but, you know.
Yeah,
she's
I know what you
20.
Mean. Yeah.
But, like, you know, she's awesome, and she really cares, and I don't think she makes that much money as an intern there, if anything. But, you know, this is what we do. You know, we go out and we tell great stories no matter what. It's a lot of fun.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That's Rob Hart. He's now a freelance photojournalist, adjunct faculty at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. He's also president of the Illinois Press Photographers Association. With me here in the studio is Jonathan Quilter of the Columbus Dispatch. Jonathan, how has the staff at the Dispatch changed over the last, well, as long as you've been there, at least, since 2005?
Right.
The
we have,
photo staff.
It's changed a little bit. We're probably a little more fortunate than some. Right now we still have 9 staff photographers, and one of our staff photographers was moved to video permanently about a couple
Doral
of years
Chenoweth,
ago.
Doral Chenoweth, yeah.
Doral did that, and also Courtney Hergesheimer did that. So, and then we've had 2 photographers leave recently and replaced 1. So it's not been as, definitely not as devastating as some staffs have been.
You know, is it something that you're talking about in the business, though? Because a lot of focus is put on the newsrooms in general. It was enlightening to prepare for this show and realize how devastated photo journalists have been across the country compared to even the reporters.
So what was your question?
I mean, is it something you're talking about?
Oh, is it something we're talking about? Well, yeah, we were recently purchased by Gatehouse, and that was a everyone, of course,
a time of fear.
That's a change, you know, a big change from the Wolf family, which was very gracious and a good owner, of course. And we didn't know exactly what that was going to mean. So everyone was a little timid, concerned, looking around, talking to people that also worked for Gatehouse. And we found out lots of different things, but we were also their biggest paper. So we thought, well, maybe there's, you know, we'll be treated a little differently. Now, we did lose, unfortunately, a lot of talent in the graphic artists,
right,
and design and some copy editors. So that that hurts photographers because we enjoyed how well we were designed at that point. So we were hurt that way, but we were, you know, of course, our own jobs, we were always concerned, but we just kept plugging through and finding out new things about how they're going to run our business. And it's been, I'll just say, okay. You know, we're kind of keeping it going and trying to stay positive. And as far as what we talk about, unfortunately, we end up talking about friends in the business or things that have mm-hmm. happened to other people. That's what we've been more concerned about right now in Ohio. And I'm also president of the Ohio News Photographers Association. So I'm seeing, of course, a decline in our membership because there's less photographers that are working. So it's a definite issue. And it's a concern all the time. You know, I feel like we're going quarter by quarter right now. We get good reports. We get a good feeling. We think we're okay. And we just continue doing our work. And the important thing is to keep concentrating on the work. That can be hard when there's this kind of a distraction. Like Rob said, it's still fun. You still want to do a great job and you still want to be more concerned about what you're producing every day for the reader. That's really what we should be doing instead of being concerned, do we have a job next year?
You know, Rob Hart, when they eliminated the photo staff at the Sun-Times, did they do something similar to what the Dispatch did in eliminating a lot of the artists and graphic designers and that kind of a thing?
Well, I mean, it had been like a slow attrition, too,
okay,
at the Sun-Times. Well, and they also owned a ton of, you know, weekly and other daily papers in the Chicago market, which, you know, I always worked in the suburbs at the smaller papers. Yeah, I mean, I see people all the time just out, you know, who used to work for us, and they're all doing other things. And it's sad because these people really cared about the neighborhoods that they gave all their time to. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure everybody in Jonathan knows, like, you work every weekend and you work every Friday night. And when you have a family, it's tough. You know,
well, where are they getting their pictures for the Sun-Times now?
You know, my student Maria is shooting for them. She's their intern. They have like a full-time freelancer that I know who's a really great, really great young photographer, Ashley. I see her at assignments. I think she's more of like a full-time she's their exclusive freelancer. I'm not exactly sure on the deal, but you know, she's really good at what she does. So I think, you know, they're using more freelancers. They're just not spending the kind of money that they did on those of us that were full-timers.
I read an interview with Donald Winslow of the National Press Photographers Association. He told Pew Research Center that he suspected that veteran photographers earned relatively high salaries, which made them tempting targets during budget cuts. Now, Jonathan, you said the Dispatch has taken more of an attrition approach. People retired, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were probably at the top. It's not a guild paper, so we don't know,
right.
How much people were making, but.
Well, under the Wolf family, I think that the, you know, journalists at our paper were pretty well compensated. I don't know how we fit in the norm, but being a family-owned paper, I think that's generally what they understood to be more important because it kept people from leaving. And if you kept them happy and comfortable and doing good work, then you didn't have to worry about too much transition. So I think that was important to the Wolf family, and I think family-owned papers probably get that, which are fewer.
Well, it also keeps out the unions.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Very true. So we did have a senior staff photographer leave and another young photographer who left for a different job and replaced that position. So one of those positions. So I think that's probably, you know, every time it comes up, it's going to be reevaluated, I'm sure, about how do we replace that person in the entire newsroom. So,
And Rob Hart, was that kind of the case at the Sun-Times when it came to when they wiped out that department, they saved a lot of money.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you know, they also sold off all the papers I used to work for to the Tribune. So I think, you know, I think they were having a hard time operating. And, I mean, we're just expensive. You know, we use expensive equipment. Mm-hmm. And we spend a lot of time out in the community telling stories. So, as you know, now that I own my own business, like, I can understand, you know, I'm buying all this equipment to do mm-hmm. visual journalism for people. And, you know, like, it's, I can see where if you're a business, you're going to make this decision that, like, let's get rid of expensive people and hire cheaper people. You know, it's not great for the quality, but, you know, I think they're just fighting to survive at this point.
Your works appeared in U.S. News and World Report, The Wall Street Journal, The Financial Times, The New York Times, USA Today, The Miami Herald, The Detroit News, and Free Press. Is that since you were laid off, or is there a greater market for freelance material now that so many newspapers have tightened the belt on their staffs?
Well, I was allowed. We were always allowed to do freelance work, kind of while I was on staff.
So that a lot of that was while you were still working.
Yeah. Okay. So some of it, you know, I could do a U.S. News assignment on my days off, or we were allowed to work for, like, you know, non-competing papers.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I don't do as much editorial work as I used to. My first year as a freelancer, I think I made 22% of my overall revenue mm-hmm. from editorial work, and it was 44% of my overall assignments. So after a while, you kind of start to realize that, you know, making $200 to work for the New York Times for a day, it's hard to sustain that kind of living.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, and I don't mean to single them out because they're a great newspaper. But, you know, there are just so many more outlets that need the photojournalism skill set that will pay you $200 an hour or more.
Mm-hmm. Non-news.
Yeah, I would say, like, it's a totally different way of doing what we would used to call, like, documentary photography for, you know, for a university or for a hospital. You're using the same skill set. It's just not. It's not an editorial client. I guess mm-hmm. you would say that.
Let's talk just for a little minute about what photography does for a news organization. Why it's important. I remember when I first started working for the Toledo Blade back in 1987. Oh my gosh! I mean, the photos were all like one column wide and one column high. They were ridiculous, and they changed a lot over time. And I came from the Grand Rapids Press, where photography was a really big deal, and then of course ended up at the Dispatch for some years, where it was a really, really big deal. It was beautiful. It was fantastic. Everybody wanted to get the right photographers, and everybody, and it was a big deal. Rob Hart, is it just not a big deal anymore?
I think it depends publication to publication. You know, there are some great visual papers out there. You know, I worked for a summer in Shelby County, Ohio, and I worked with a lot of the Dispatch photographers. You know, they would come up for stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I would pick up, and this was, you know, the 90s, and I would pick up the paper, and the photos were huge and and beautiful. And I think we've all seen, you know, a lot of places kind of like, you know, as paper gets more expensive, the size of the paper shrinks. But, you know, we have this huge display on the internet too. So I guess it depends on how you interact with our work too. But you know, it's tough to it's tough to see the thing that you grew up loving, you know, the physical newspaper get smaller
and
smaller.
It's just changed. It's changed so much in the last 35 years. It went, to me, it reached a nadir, and then now it's just been a decline, you know, since the really the end of the 90s, but you know, not in a decline in terms of the skill level, but in what you're actually seeing in the paper. Jonathan Quilter, though, you do have a whole nother place to display the work, and that's online.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot more of it's
right.
being seen.
Well, I was going to say to what you asked previously, that is, though, that, you know, the newspapers now, I mean, I think every newspaper leads with a dominant photograph almost across the board.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at one tool you can see that is at the Newseum website. You can go to the daily pages, front pages of all the papers across the country. And I think they're all going to have a dominant photo on the front. So visually, I don't think there's been a real decline in the importance of visuals. It's just how maybe people are compensated. Is there enough value placed on what it's worth to pay for those good visuals. And now at our place, you know, we were a broadsheet, which we didn't realize how wonderful that was till we shrunk and our paper is small now. And I think the photographers are the ones that missed that the most, because display was always gorgeous. And we could, if we ran a 5-column photo, it was meaningful. It really felt impactful. And sometimes it was just beautiful. Other times it was very storytelling. It just had an impact, though. Of course, we still run a dominant photo on all our section fronts. It just feels a little too small sometimes.
Yeah.
But especially if you go to the coffee shop and pick up the Cleveland Plain Dealer. I'm like, oh, my goodness, the stuff they're doing with photos. And they're like, when they covered the World Series, they would have a complete full-page photograph to tell, to help get you into that story. And that's really what these photos are doing. They're drawing you in to get you to that story. And that is the importance of them. They should make you feel something at the least. You know, it can be anything. Just feel something when you look at that photo. It could be laughing. It could be crying. It could just, it's something that engages you, that makes you want to find out about the people in that photo, the connection they're having, and why do I, and get you into that story. You know, like you said, when you wanted to work with good photographers at the paper, it's because you probably knew that it might help your story too, get display. So there are certainly times that a photo may fall flat. We didn't work it out at the right time. We didn't get there at the right time. We don't have the kind of image that is going to put it, that story, as the lead the next day on Page One or Metro or Life or Business or whatever, or Sports. So it's, I think there, I don't see a decline in the importance of the visuals. But it's, of course, what's the quality going to be, and will it be able to sustain the best kind of photojournalists?
We are talking about photojournalism in the 21st century. You just heard from Jonathan Quilter. He's photojournalist for the Columbus Dispatch, also with us. Rob Hart, freelance photojournalist, adjunct faculty member at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University, and president of the Illinois Press Photographers Association. More, if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. In 2013, the Chicago Sun-Times unexpectedly laid off its entire full-time photography staff. Photographer Rob Hart was among the 28 people in that department. 2013 Chicago Journalist of the Year, one minute, the next, laid off. And that is not an isolated case of the devastation of the photojournalist profession in the United States. Still with us by phone is Rob Hart, now a freelance photojournalist and adjunct faculty of photojournalism at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University, and Columbus Dispatch photographer Jonathan Quilter with me here in the studio. If you have a question or comment about photojournalism in the 21st century, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Rob Hart, when you're teaching photojournalism, tell us about what's changed the most in the teaching of it and in the execution of it.
You know, I get this a lot from photographers who all say, like, you know, how can you teach people to do a job that may not exist soon? But, you know, especially at Medill, a lot of the report, you know, I teach mostly, like, people who are doing reporting, how to use a camera, because, they've never held a DSLR a lot of times. And, you know, a lot of these kids are doing documentary filmmaking. You know, they're not just doing print reporting anymore. So, you know, there's just so many different ways that they're able to get their stories out, and we kind of have to respond to, like, how are they telling stories, and how do we help you tell stories across everywhere? I mean, I had a kid who I was helping her, you know, do, like, a really awesome story on Snapchat, which I don't use, and I had never really used, but, you know, like, we figured it out. And, you know, how do you tell, like, a good documentary story quickly? You know, I think, as Jonathan knows, like, our job is to show, or, you know, my job was to show up and to understand the situation really fast. And, you know, to really look and to listen, and then to translate how those people felt through usually one picture or a series of pictures. And that's kind of what I think I want to get at most with people. Like, you know, you have to understand the communities you're in, and you have to understand people and know how to read them and make them feel comfortable. And I can't imagine, you know, with this climate of attacks on the media, you know, like verbally everywhere, you know, like, how, like, this has to be affecting young people who want to do journalism. And, you know, like, we just teach them, like, be passionate and be creative, and just keep trying, because that's what we all did when we were young. I think I saw this kind of coming a little bit, but like we were going to do it anyway.
You mean the demise of the business?
Yeah, in a way.
I hate to say the word demise, but it's a change. It's changed. I often describe it as walking across a cavern on a rope bridge that's unraveling. And can you get across to the other side before it unravels? Mm. I mean, will it survive given the changing business model? I guess is the question. So yeah, you got a lot of people. So it's not that traditional journalism student then anymore, right, Rob?
Yeah, it's not the way that we grew up, I think, ingesting media, like I think the three of us grew up reading newspapers, and our parents were watching the nightly news, and Photoshop came out when I was in high school, and I really wanted to use it, right? And, we really kind of like, we always wanted to learn about new stuff, and there's just so many ways that you can enjoy, visual journalism. I think Jonathan's Instagram account, I probably spent like an hour looking at all his photos and watching videos. And, it was great. Like, it's a really great way to experience, someone who translates the world visually. And you can learn a lot about, them and their community and their lives. And to me, like, that's, I think, why I got into journalism, is because I was curious. And I like people and I want to hang out with them.
Do you have a lot of faith in the whole citizen journalism movement? Go ahead, Jonathan.
Why let Jonathan do that?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I even quite understand what that could be, because I don't think it makes up very much at all of what we consume, especially visually. Now, I think a citizen journalist might be useful in a situation where there's, something awful happens in front of a lot of people and they can all document it immediately and share it. But the day-to-day stories that we do are not going to be coming from citizen journalists, the ones that really make people care about their community and engage them with what's going on and around them. Those are done by journalists who are trained and have experience and know how to approach these subjects, who go to meetings and find out story ideas, who continue to, push the narrative of what's going on in your community, that you need experience to continue to build on those stories. And I think that a citizen journalist, I don't know. I think that must mean, somebody that just happens to be in the right place at the right time to capture something. And that's, everybody does have a phone, and that's not a bad thing. But I don't think it really competes with the kind of in-depth storytelling that matters more to the overall storytelling that we're trying to do. I was thinking of a comparison, like I drive to and from work and I see a lot of citizen race car drivers, but they're not. I'm not going to put my money on them to win a race, So I think you've got to remember that experience and education and these things, and learning from peers and editors and all this that builds into what a journalist really is as a professional, not to mention the biggest one is trust. When you're working at a major newspaper, you've been vetted, you've been proved to be trustworthy. And if you do something wrong, that could be the end of your career. And it's, there are journalists, photojournalists that have used Photoshop the wrong way and they've been exposed and they're not working in the industry
anymore.
Like
the Steve McCurry's of the world from National Geographic?
That wasn't a cloning issue. I guess I was thinking of people that might have cloned things in and out of a photo, like actually put something in a photo or taken something. Well, no, he did do
that. He said the people that worked
right,
for him did
right,
it.
Right.
I don't know.
That's true. So he's taken it to a different level as far as what he says that, he's not really, wasn't a journalist anymore. So you could change your story if you want to look at it that way. But you can lose that trust in buckets. You earn it back in little drips, but you can lose it really quick. So
right.
That's the thing that we're all, we hold each other accountable. So I think it's, citizen journalism. I don't know. I'm not sure. I can't. The only thing I was trying to think of a visual that stuck in my mind.
You would do
and
that,
I thought of
you?
One thing, and that was back at the Oklahoma City bombing.
Yeah.
There was a bank teller who aspired to be a journalist, I think, but had a camera and went across the street, I guess, and took the Pulitzer Prize winning photograph of a fireman carrying a dead baby girl. And I mean, that to me is about the only image that stuck in my head that's taken by a citizen that actually impacted, the story, that had something that stuck in my mind as far as, and that's 1995. So I'm not sure I see citizen journalism, and maybe I'm misunderstanding what that means, but I don't see it as an everyday thing that we are going to rely on, I think, to help push a story along.
What about you, Rob Hart?
You know, whenever they say that, I always think of, you know, when you'd watch the news and they always show, like, you know, a sunset photo or a picture taken out of someone's patio with snow on it that was just shot from, you know, in of the other side of the window.
Yeah.
You know, to me, like, that's how citizen journalism works. Whereas, like, you know, Jonathan and I know, like, how many times have you ever shot a snow feature when you weren't, like, standing knee deep in snow?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we're on different sides of the glass. And, you know, I mean, I think it's great that people get to share photos and stories. But, you know, it's not gonna be the kind of thing that you remember. It's not going to be the kind of journalism that, you know, I mean, I have young kids. Like, I really want them to grow up in a world where there's great stories to read.
Hmm.
When they can read. Hopefully they'll be reading shortly. But, you know, and, like, you know, I want stuff like NPR to exist, and I want great in-depth storytelling. And, like, how do we do this? You know, how do we keep fighting for it? And how do we keep, some money coming in? So people like Jonathan can, you know, keep doing this great stuff. You know, I would love that. But, like, I don't think citizen journalism is going to get very far. I mean, if you think about how many people had cell phones at the Boston Marathon for the bombing.
Mm.
Like, I can't think of any cell phone video or picture off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
I can think of, like, some great photojournalism that was done by John Tomaki at the Boston Globe and Kelvin Ma, I think his name was, who was a Medill grad, who took some great photos. You know, he was working, I think, for a university at the time, Kelvin was. But, like, you know, I mean, can you guys think of any cell phone pictures or video from that? Like,
you're right. I think what I remember is just the maybe a video clip of an explosion in the distance because that was on someone's cell phone. But you're right. When I actually think of the event,
yeah.
What comes back to me is the terrific photojournalism made of real moments. You know, what separates it, too, is, you know, the training you have as a photojournalist is, you know, when you learn about framing and light and composition and your foregrounds and your backgrounds, these are things that you learn early on. And they matter your whole career, and they become second nature at some point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the photojournalist that stood in front of a person being helped by a race organizer who was injured and bleeding you know, someone standing next to him may have stayed full height and taken that picture and been very distracting photograph. You can tell by the photojournalist who got down lower and cleaned up that background and made sure what you were seeing was the impactfulness of the photo and cleaned it up probably so naturally he didn't even think about it. That's where you get after so many years of doing it, that you immediately just move around to until that picture is pleasing to you so that you know it will be pleasing to a reader and take away the distraction elements. And just hit the impact of what that photo is supposed to be. Those are just things that come with experience and training that, you know, somebody could stand there with a cell phone and snap a picture for sure of the same thing. But the ones that – it also probably helps that he worked for an organization that printed it, that therefore we all saw it. But it's because he or she is there and doing the kind of job that they know have been trained to do.
You reminded me of an experience I had when we were covering the floods down in southern Ohio, the big flash floods. And a woman had her entire trailer was, I can't remember if you were around then or not, mm-hmm. I don't think so, but her entire trailer was wiped out. And they had forced me to take a camera down. And I kept saying, I don't want to take pictures. And they're like, you got to take a camera because we don't know what's going to come back today because there was such widespread flooding. We didn't know who was going to get where and what. So I did it. And the whole time I'm taking the picture of her, I'm like, this will never get into the paper. Don't worry. It won't get in. I'm terrible at this. There's no way they're going to pick the photo. Because she kept saying, oh, look at me. I look so terrible and everything's so horrible. And sure enough, sure shooting. I can remember the head of the photo running, going, she is wearing red. She's wearing red, you know, because they were looking for that blast of color and the photo turned out all right. It was this gigantic photo on the front page. But that's it. That was a fluke that I still feel sorry for. Carl in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Carl.
Hi. Nice talking. I was going to say, you know, photography is pretty much as in journalism, even as a other part of my career is pretty much it's changed so much. It's kind of a dying career where it's not like it used to be. I've been a photographer for 3 decades, and it used to be a good career, and now a lot of writers for newspapers are using digital cameras on their phone, and it's, you know, I started with an 8x10 Deerdorf camera, big camera, and I did a lot of work, and there was a lot of work for a lot of people. Even look at what do you think of the newspapers now? They have very limited photo staffs. It's really unfortunate.
Carl, thanks a lot.
It's true. It's evolving. I mean, we have to keep changing with it. It has always been actually a hard profession to get into and a hard one to maintain. It's a limited number. You know, it's a very unique profession. I mean, it's one of the best ones still, I believe. I love it. I mean, it's still so much fun, and you get such a perspective on life by getting to walk in and out of these homes, situations, events, that you learn so much about life, and you just want to share that. That's what Rob's saying too. You just want to continue to get those stories and share them. And you know what Carl just said, I mean, he's right. It's changing. I hate to call it dying, but it's I think there's, you know, the parts of it will, and they've called for the death of photojournalism 20 years ago, just like newspapers, and there's still going to be parts of it that maintain and that we have to evolve with, especially video storytelling, because that is what makes money on the internet. So you have to produce good storytelling video to keep people coming back. Just like those cell phone videos aren't going to keep people's interest if we can't, you know, continue to, you know, if those are going to be too bland, they're just not going to have the kind of substance that you need to engage people. So if that becomes the normal, that will further decline newspapers. So the visuals are still very important.
I want to talk about what might become the new normal coming up. We'll continue our conversation. If you have a question or comment for my guests, you just heard from Jonathan Quilter. He's photojournalist for the Columbus Dispatch. Also with us by phone, Rob Hart, freelance photojournalist and adjunct faculty at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the role of photojournalism in the 21st century. It's been a rough time for those who tell stories through pictures. Still with us by phone is freelance photojournalist and adjunct faculty at photojournalism at the Medill School of Journalism, Rob Hart. Also here with me in the studio, Columbus Dispatch photojournalist Jonathan Quilter. In a recent interview with the New York Times, former editor of the National Press Photographers Association's New Photographer magazine, Donald Winslow blamed a devaluation of the content of images. He said there was a great economic devaluation and a philosophical devaluation, that it's been about the bean counters, not the best journalism. And Rob, does that, you know, I think that Jonathan was starting to get at that when we took a break about how we value them now. People are paid a lot less.
Yeah, of course. You know, I mean, I make very, very little when I work for editorial publications, and a lot more when I don't. And I just had to come to the realization that's their business and that's how they want to value me. And I usually value myself a little higher, and it's hard. It's a tough pill to swallow, right? Because for most of my life, I had a $40,000 a year salary, and I could support myself, and I could do great journalism. There just isn't as much money out there. Us experienced people, there's just less work for older people. And I love Donald. He ran the News Photographer magazine for a long time and did a story about us when we got laid off. But I think part of it misses out on the great opportunity that exists for our skill sets. I mean, I think there's a clear distinction as photojournalism as a job and photojournalism as a skill set. Mm-hmm. And to me, like, that's how I've had to see things in order to, you know, in order to survive and to, like, you know, just keep my kids fed and, you know, keep them doing fun things like gymnastics classes. you know, you've got to figure out how to survive.
Yeah, he says in that article, too, that, you know, it may be that you have to, like you're saying, exactly, you have to do other kinds of photography to support your photojournalism.
Habit.
I didn't want to say it, but that's really the best way to say it. Because you don't want to give it up. It's something you might a little bit addicted to, and you don't want to give it up. It's the storytelling. But that raised also what is true is that storytelling and photography has taken on lots of different avenues. And advertising and wedding photography is huge now. That they want a journalist, kind of a photojournalist, to kind of take their pictures.
Oh,
there's real moments. And you know, that's great. And that does pay bills much better than, you know, your editorial assignments, as you said. But you don't want to lose that either, because there's still so much importance, I think, on having a real photojournalist take these, you know, editorial assignments that know how to handle them.
You know, and I'm thinking, Rob Hart, about your student who's an intern at the Sun-Times now. Who's teaching her there? Where is she getting her mentoring when it comes to photography there?
Well, there's one photo editor left, Rich Hine.
That's not enough.
I know. and, you know, part of it comes from us, like the photo community. You know, 4 days after we got laid off, the Sun-Times had, like, a new intern start, Alex Robleski, who he just won the White House, or last year he was the College Photographer of the Year for the White House Press Association. Like, a really, really, really talented kid. But he started at the Sun-Times, you know, 4 days after 28 people that he wanted to work with were gone.
Hmm.
And, you know, he faced a lot of heat from us, you know, not from me, but, from our community as photographers, because everybody was upset that all their friends were no longer working with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alex and I sat down and we talked about this, and, you know, him and I, like, just, you know, like, I would help him when he needed help. You know, and he just graduated from Columbia in the last summer, and, you know, he's in New York freelancing, and he's worked overseas, and he's done some really great work. But a lot of it just, you know, came from opportunities that exist outside of the Sun-Times. And some of it obviously came from opportunities that the Sun-Times afforded him. I mean, mm-hmm. they were giving him, you know, he had, what, 3-4 assignments a day. And, like, that kind of experience is invaluable.
Right.
But also, like, you know, us as a community, like I think a lot of us as older photographers, you know, we need to step up and help people. Mm. And to, you know, to show them, like, there are other ways to make money other than, you know, these $125 newspaper assignments.
We have an email from Mary. She says, just after midnight, I checked online newspapers to get the latest on the Oscar flub. On a hunch, I went to the LA Times and found an incredible front page close-up of the people on the presentation stage during the mix-up. And when I read that, it sort of cracked me up, because even while I was working on my script this morning for you guys, I was jumping over to the New York Times because I wanted to see the photos from the Oscars last night because of the flub, you know, the best picture mistake. And I didn't even think about what I was doing while I was working on this show, that I was escaping into photography to tell a story.
Yeah, that's hopefully what it does come naturally, and it's expected. So it's hopefully there's understanding that without it, there's a void. There's a big void in our communities and in our national storytelling, everything that we do. That if you didn't find it, what would that mean? That'd be a very bad day. So it's these wire services, of course, are important to daily papers, and for better or worse, however, that keeps maybe us from sending photographers like we used to events outside of our outer belt, for example.
Right.
You know, like, that is an economic decision. And now subscribing to those services is not cheap. So it's a decision that's made probably every week or two when things come up in our paper. Do we send someone or not? Can we afford them to be on the road? But I always feel like, knowing our photographer and our staff, I would always want our own people covering any event, just because I know the quality I'm going to get. Wire services are fine, but you really don't know which photographer is there that day and what kind of things you're going to be getting back. And you're limited. That whatever you get is what you get. You're not going to have any other choices. So,
Given this devaluation we've been talking about, Rob Hart, do major publications still judge photos by the same quality standards, or are they judging them by how much they cost?
You know, it's hard to tell, kind of as a freelancer, since I don't really have that, you know, the inside baseball anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it seems to me like there, since there's less, obviously if there's less people, there's going to be less time spent, like, on this. But, you know, I know a lot of editors at great publications. You know, I go to workshops where we have really, really great photo editors, you know, from Mother Jones or even the New York Times photo editors are, you know, they're really great people, and they spend a ton of time, you know, selecting images. I know the sports editor at the New York Times is, like, he spends a lot of time on the print layout. If you've seen any of the sports sections that they produce, they're beautiful, and they had a great story. Matt Roth shot on boxing, I think, in Baltimore this week, and it was a really, really nice, really beautiful layout. So I know it exists in places, but, you know, there are always going to be some businesses that just don't value certain things. And I think for those of us, it's like, I want to look at the great work and who's doing it, and I want to work for them.
Yeah, exactly. Jonathan Quilter, how does the Dispatch decide?
There's different variations of that, but we do subscribe to the AP Wire and to the New York Times photo service, and we don't subscribe to Reuters and Getty. There's better other images there too, and the Wire, the AP is not bad. It's just that's a generic term for lots of different photojournalism being done out there. So we on a basis of like a national coverage. Yeah, there's a photo editor there every night who is looking through the wires to find the most compelling photos to print for each story. So we still definitely go through the wire services every evening to find the best stuff going on around the world.
We have an email from Betsy. She writes, throughout history, there have been some incredibly iconic photos that define moments in time, and people can immediately identify the time when those photos were taken because they were so well done by a professional photographer. Can the guests talk about how they manage their emotions when taking photos or video in very emotional situations? Rob Hart?
Yes. you know, it's a tough job. That's a tough one. And you know, this is what we do every day. Is, you know, we're committed to telling these stories, and we're committed to you know, like getting to an emotional level with people. You know, like, you have some really great questions, and I will say that. anyway, Jonathan, do you want to weigh in on this?
Yes, I mean,
it's the same thing for a reporter. It's the same kind of challenge.
Yeah, I don't mind admitting I've definitely teared up at events.
Sure.
I've been emotionally moved by what's happening right in front of me. Sometimes it's been as simple as a high school basketball game, though. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just see something good happen or something meaningful in that person's life that I have the privilege of capturing and sharing. Mm-hmm. So and a lot of times it's in someone's living room. They're talking about their deceased loved one. And I work with Holly Zechariah on unsolved murders a lot in the city and the area. And it's emotional. That is at the heart of what we do is storytelling. But the storytelling should be exposing your heart. Like, it should really get to people. And it is definitely an emotional business. How do you control it? I mean, you still fall back on your training, and you're worrying about, again, there's little things in your mind that you're worrying about capturing. And you are focused on light and the moment and things that, you know, are important to tell. So even if there are tears coming down my face, I know that there's more important now that I may pay attention to what I'm getting, because I need to make sure I can convey what I'm feeling to readers. So then there's a flip side of, like, some people ask about, like, sporting events. Like, it is like an athlete. Sometimes you're at these huge, like, Ohio State football games, and it does get quiet. This moment that happens in a split second, it kind of is, you don't hear everything else. You're really so focused on making sure you didn't mess up that moment for that meaningful play that people think it's so great. Oh, you're down there on the field. Well, it's also very nerve-wracking. I can't miss. Like, I can't come say I didn't get the shot of the game. Mm-hmm. So there's that flip side to it, too. But it's a good question, because we're human. We're definitely not robots out there with cameras.
I wonder if Betsy wasn't inspired by the conversation we were having earlier about the Boston Marathon bombing. Rob Hart, and how you operate in situations like that. You know, I just, as a reporter, you know, I would go and talk to people. But as a photographer, you're right there in the thick of it, taking photos of things happening in real time.
Yeah, that was always my least favorite part of the whole job.
Yeah. The
crises,
when I was an intern,
yeah, when I was an intern in Ohio, in Shelby County, we, you know, there was a, you know, a guy who murdered three teenagers and another man, and, you know, he was on the run for 5 days, and, like, it was really hard being, I was 21, and I was covering, you know, funerals for these kids in a community that I didn't really know that well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was, like, a really tough lesson in that, like, you know, like, people are going to yell at you, and you just have to be, like, this neutral, loving presence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you kind of learn. One of my friends always says it's like being a vending machine, and people are, you know, trying to get the chips out, and you just don't react.
Hmm.
And I think that was, like, one of the biggest lessons I ever learned as, you know, as a young photographer, was, like, just how to care about people. Because, you know, like, this whole community lost, you know, three really, really promising young people. It was tough. You know, and their families would come out and yell at you for photographing their funeral. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I remember the Columbus Dispatch photographer, I don't remember his name anymore, was standing next to me. And he said, you know, like, you know, we're going to move in closer. And I was like, no, no. But, you know, we did. And it, like, you know, and it was great because his photos were so much better than mine. And, you know, I learned, like, that was something you need to learn how to do. Like, you've got to learn to have tough skin, and to do something that you don't necessarily, you know, like a citizen journalism, you know, mm-hmm. they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't go to someone's funeral. And, but, you know, like, that's what we do. And it's some days it's horrible and you feel like mm-hmm. a jerk, but, like, it's telling the story of your community. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, a really great lesson I learned from a dispatch photographer. And I've never forgot that.
Moving closer.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Robert Capp always said, you know, like,
if it's not good enough, you're not close enough. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, you have to be emotionally close to people. I mean,
right.
You know, a physical closeness does almost nothing. And, you know, like, and I, you know, I still think of that photo every day that was in the dispatch, and, like, mine just wasn't good. You know, and I got schooled, and, you know, I was one of those things you, like, I'm never going to let this happen again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so.
Yeah. People will remember that they were irritated that you were there, but a lot is forgotten and forgiven the next day when a beautiful photograph tells their story.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, Jonathan?
Right. It's you don't always know how you're impacting people, and sometimes you really do know how you're impacting people, and you have to own that, though. You have to be honest mm-hmm. about it. And if I've taken calls before from angry people, and you have to try to convey what our job is. It is difficult. It absolutely can be heart wrenching, and they're in a very emotional state. Of course, they don't. And I've, you know, as a father now, you know, I change my tune a little bit. What if this was my kid? Yeah, mm-hmm. you got to think about that. But it always affected me, but it affects me greater now. It's a different feeling. There is importance. You have to make sure there's importance. You feel certain about that conviction that this is important, that I take this kind of picture. And sometimes it is taking it first and figuring it out later. Was this a true representation of what happened? Is this really the kind of emotional picture that will help tell this story? Are we taking advantage of these folks or not? Like, those are things we do weigh in the editing process. That is why editors are important and your peers are important. And so when I hear, like, Rob talk about an army of one in Chicago, like, you need that help to help you make those good decisions for your readers.
Jonathan yeah. Quilter, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Jonathan Quilter, photojournalist for the Columbus Dispatch. And Rob Hart, thanks to you as well. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, Ann. I loved it.
Rob Hart, freelance photojournalist, adjunct faculty for the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University, president of the Illinois Press Photographers Association. Thanks to Kyle McKinnon for producing this show, and thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.